Tonight's subject is losing I-ness in I. The word surrender has a connotation of weakness, of yielding, as if there was something more powerful than you which has made you bend your knee. And because of that word and the connotation of weakness, we are apt to forget that the message of the Bible is a mystical one. And behind the words is a meaning totally unrelated to the normal connotation of words. Meekness, for example, would imply a sort of milquetoasty way of life. Resisting not evil would imply a person is defenseless or afraid. And yet behind these words is the momentous revelation of power, of dominion. Behind our visible world is this infinite, continuous, perfect power of peace, of love, of fulfillment, unwavering. And our surrender is to that. Our meekness is to that. Our resistance or non-resistance to evil is because we have a sword of truth. And our surrender then is really an acceptance of dominion. Somehow the word surrender further implies a debasement. It implies that in you is some kind of a weakness. But rather, this surrender is a surrendering of that which is false. It is not a surrendering of that which is true or real. It is a surrendering of that which has no reality. And so we accept the instruction to surrender, and we try to figure out what is it that I'm to surrender. And at first, we're willing to make some sort of a concession. We'll surrender an attitude, even some of our material things if necessary. But by now you have realized that what you're going to surrender is what every individual on this earth thinks is himself or herself. You're going to surrender mortality, humanhood, the complete sense of selfhood. And it isn't until you find there's no ground beneath you to walk upon that you realize the full momentity of that surrender. It's asking you to get out and walk upon nothing, without a floor under your feet. It's asking you to confiscate every idea that you ever knew, every belief you ever had, and reach out like a child, knowing that Father is near. Father will lead. It's saying to you, make no decisions of your own. The more you dwell on the idea of surrender, the more you realize that it is introducing you to another self. A self quite different than you have ever dared to believe exists. Not a self that tomorrow will be a better you, or in 10 years from now will be a more successful you, or in 20 years from now will be an acclaimed you, or a you that is with less fear. No, a completely different you. A you completely unlike what you are this moment. A you that your human mind cannot begin to envisage in any shape or form or attitude. And the surrender is necessary only because there's no other way for this you to be born. We can never go beyond our consciousness. And because of it, we can never find this you. We must simply lay aside our present you and let the higher self take over. It is an act of such great faith that you must never attempt this act until you have had inner assurance. Cautiously and carefully you must ascertain that the voice is the voice and not personal desire seeping through. You are asked never to walk upon the waters of spirit until you have been assured from within that your direction, your contact, your receptivity are all complete, and you are truly being divinely led. Until then, mistaking the voice of the personal self for the voice of the Father, we might venture out where we are unsupported. But presuming that you have receive the inner assurance that there have been sufficient signs that you have no doubts, then you are prepared to relinquish all decisions, all thoughts, all concepts, and become what Joel describes as an ice cube floating on the water. Now this is a fairly good simile for our purpose for the moment, in that it describes accurately certain things, certain conditions that are similar to the relationship between man and God. The cube on the water is the very same substance as the water. There is no quality in the water that is not a quality in the cube. All that the cube relies on the water for is its movement. If the water doesn't move, the cube doesn't move. But ultimately, that cube must melt into the water. The relationship of oneness exists even when it's a cube. It and the water are one. One substance in two different forms. And there's nothing that the cube asks of the water and nothing that the water can give to the cube that it doesn't already have. And this is our relationship with God. And when this relationship with God is firmly established in your consciousness, then as the cube rests in the water, letting the water determine what the cube will do next, so do we rest in the Father, in divine consciousness, which is as the water, and we let our hand be moved by the Father, our body be moved by the Father, our thoughts be moved by the Father. Of our own self, we do nothing. We accept that in the presence of God, we are in the presence of divine intelligence. In the presence of God, we are in the presence of divine power, divine love, divine harmony, divine desire to maintain a perfect universe. And we accept that in my oneness with the Father, all that the Father does and all that the Father knows and all that the Father hath represents the quantity and quality of my own being, for we are one substance. And this becomes our way of life. In the Father I rest, completely satisfied that whatever the Father does is the right thing. Completely satisfied that whatever the Father does includes me. To the extent that we are living in this oneness, taking no thought for our lives, for our activities, having no thoughts of the past or of the future, for God is not in the past or in the future, but dwelling in the now, we are living a moment of Christhood. If ever you put your early plants out to bud, or have planted saplings, you know that you have to protect them with splints to keep them moving upright. And so it is that we have to move that mind of ours in such a way that it is retained within these splints that we put there to keep it moving upright. We have to keep the mind God-centered, ever watchful of the Father's will. And of course, no one is going to do this who mistakes self-glory for the real goal. Many of us have thought that we were willing to put aside self-glory only to find that what we really meant is we're willing to put it aside for a summer or a winter or a season until we get what we want. And even those of us who are sincere have a tendency to get what we want and then we take over again. Our willingness to relinquish our own will to the Father is usually there only when we are lacking something that we want. And when that is given, and we no longer are lacking, we now become very self-sufficient again, no longer poor in spirit, no longer thinking in terms of what is the Father's will. And we take the reins in our own hands all over again and then find that we slip. This is a learning how to live in the Father's will. It is a very delicate science. Father, thy will be done. And that means that I have removed my will. I may appear to the world to have no will, but I have a very strong will because it's the Father's will. In the meekness to the will, you find that you are now going to receive demands upon you, demands that require much more direction, power, and activity than you would have ever dared to accept for yourself with your own will. In your meekness, you are lifted into a different tower, and now the demands upon you increase, so that finally you are told the day of a passive life is over. You have lived in this meekness long enough. You have listened. You have been receptive. Now you must be responsive. Now, because the contact is established, now because you can move out blindly, knowing you have eyes in the Father, the meek is given the assignment. And the assignment is anything except what the world would consider a meek one. Pilate, thou hast no power over me. Does that sound like a meek man in the terms of the world's idea of meekness? Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I meekly will raise it up again. That's not meekness as the world sees it. This is a different kind of meekness, because behind it, it has the infinite power of God released through the meekness. The will of God in you comes through this meekness. And when you have the will of God in you released, you are making nuclear fission look like a kindergarten school. What can stand before the will of God? Is there some kind of a missile that can intercept the will of God and turn it away? When the will of God is the center of your being, realized and released, then what are you? You are the will of God. You are in a perfect state of oneness. Whatever must come through you is ordained. It has no opposition in this entire universe. It cannot fail. It cannot make a mistake. It cannot hurt anything in the universe. It can move through steel. It can move through germs. It can move through all types of appearances called physical opposition. It can move through the Red Sea. It can push a mountain into that sea. It can grow through a stone. There is nothing on this earth that can stop the will of God. And this will in you is your dominion. Dominion is not in the human being. Dominion is in I, the Spirit of God in you. And when you have become meek unto I, then I, the dominion of God in you, become the living will of the Father. And you become the living will of the Father, clothed in the garment of human flesh to the naked eye of man. But actually, the pure, immaculate Spirit of the Father, walking this earth as the will of the Father, glorifying the Father, doing the Father's work on earth. That is our purpose here, then, to be the living will of God. Be ye perfect as your Father Now again here is a veiled revelation, one of the most important in the Bible. Inasmuch as there is nothing on this earth to obstruct the will of God, know that the will of God is being done and has been being done since forever. There has never been a moment when the will of God was not being done on earth. And that will never change, regardless of what appearances may come to your attention. Be sure that there is nothing on this earth that can ever stop the will of God from expressing itself. Now go a step further. There is no other will. That which is not the will of God does not exist. God's will is the only will. Oh, there may be many impostors, many beliefs in self-will, but the only will there is the will of God, because the only being there is God. Now then, there is nothing to oppose the will, and therefore, when it says, be ye perfect, you must be certain. It is telling you that it is my will that you be perfect, and therefore, because there is nothing to oppose my will, it is finished. You are perfect. It is done. There is nothing can be added to you or subtracted. Your perfect self exists, for it is the will of God. It is the acceptance of that perfect self in which is centered the perfect will of God, toward which you are told to be meek. To accept a perfect you embodying the perfect will of God, the perfect life of God, the unopposed truth of God, and be meek unto that, now and here. And then, because there is nothing to oppose this, it must be so. And all else that appears other than this cannot be so. Is it the will of God that cancer be on this earth? And there is no one can say it is. Well then, if it is not the will of God, it cannot exist. And its appearance is merely that alone, an appearance. That which is not the will of God cannot have an existence, a reality, a substance, because there's no will to put it there. Can there be a disease on the face of the earth if it is not willed by God? And the answer is no. And yet you see diseases. Yes, but they are not the will of God, and therefore, because it is not the will of God for diseases to be here, they are not here. You will discover that every imperfection in this world is not the will of God, and therefore, is not here. You will discover that you can only have a perfect universe because that is the will of God, and that must be the present fact. To this we are asked to surrender. To this we are asked to be receptive and obedient and responsive. For this is the perfection of God surrounding us all, and now walking forth, accepting the will of God in you as your will. Why would you want to have a will that would interfere with the will of God? Why would you want to act from a local focus when you can act from the infinite will of the Father? And so we remove all personal will, all personal desire. We will not interfere with our Father's universe. We are the ice cube. What good is a wave if it has no ocean behind it? We have the infinite ocean of spirit to move us. And we rest in it. And if it takes a month or two to learn how to do this, what of it? It doesn't take any more. It takes a month or two. But it really takes that month or two of really getting down to it and learning how to listen to the infinite as it directs its own will through you, and you become the living embodiment of that will. When the will of the Father is your only will, how can your hand do anything wrong? What can it do that would be wrong? Can it harm? Only if it's moved by individual will. If it's moved by the will of God, wherever it moves, it will be doing the work of God. If the body is moved by the will of God, wherever it moves, it will be doing the will of God. And this is how we bring our harmony into existence. Thou seest me, thou seest the will of God in operation. Thou seest the will of the Father that sent me. Now remember those splinters around the mind to keep it upright. The minute you move outside of this, you lose it. You have to move quietly, easily, slowly, carefully, in a state of constant listening to the Father within. You're always on the high watch. But you do not move until you are told to. You rest in the Word. And it is difficult. It is as narrow a path as you will find. And it does take a month or two. But 10 years ago, it would have taken us 5 years. Now we can do it in a month or two because we've learned something about the silence. And we do know the letter of truth. That truth in us becomes very important. It takes the mind and it lifts it. It transforms it, and that truth becomes alive. You find you can live by that truth. The revealed word of the prophets becomes alive in you as a guide. Now look again at the three temptations of Jesus and see for yourself how steadfastly he stood, rooted in the will of the Father, not in his own personal will. See how clearly he surrendered all personal sense beyond any measure that any of us have up to this point been asked to do. Think of the momentous meekness that could look at all of Rome and say, this is not a cause, this is an effect. This is a symptom. Think of the tremendous meekness that could stand in the face of that empire and not be concerned about personal safety. Only a message of rebirth. Only a message that this, which is Rome, is a cancer. It is not the cause, It is the symptom. It is the effect. The axe must go to the root. It won't help me to remove Rome. That is meekness. What enemy coming at you would you not want to remove? And if there was a choice of helping someone dear to you, wouldn't you want to help them? He overcame wanting to help the Hebrews. This was a tremendous activity of meekness unto the Father, not to restore these Hebrews to their homeland, to their idea of their own personal greatness, to their own kingdom on earth, and not to want to destroy Rome either, but rather to be crucified to show that meekness unto the Father is the way. Could he have done it without the inner assurance first that I and the Father are one? What did he gain by doing it? Life eternal. Identity. The infinite was his name from that point on. It becomes very shocking to those not prepared, but when we're told to die, it means die. It really means to die. Because when you are in your new consciousness, you realize you have died. That fellow that was there isn't there anymore. That which died is somebody who was once very dear to you, somebody you struggled valiantly to protect and preserve, and that person really dies. That death is much more difficult than the death of a physical body. It's a complete letting go of every desire to protect oneself, to be safe, to be secure, to be comfortable, to be happy. Joel says it's even an end of the desire to give something to somebody. It's a desirelessness in which the only desire is to be the infinite self. Now, as you feel your self dropping away, you'll know that you're beginning to walk on water in a quite a different way than you had anticipated. You're at a point where words are useless. You're at a point where you drop back into the infinite, where the meat is, where the substance is, where life is. And your entire life is lived in the invisible. You're not concerned about the outer effect. You're not concerned about what appears out here. That's up to God. Your concern is never to let go of the one self. And that's all. To let this contact ripen to such a degree that the false human consciousness dissolves, and with it dissolves your concepts of the world, your concepts of your own physical self, your concepts of your job, your concepts of your marriage relationship, your concepts of your friendships. You are translating your world into Christ, into spirit, into light. There's a place where you may find yourself feeling, experiencing infinity itself. Before infinity differentiates itself into the infinite forms of this world, you actually feel your infinite self. You even feel that infinite self then forming itself as the infinite manifestations of the invisible. It doesn't last very long, but you're given that insight so you can know that I am no longer confined to one form. There's not just a me in this human body. I am being reborn into a substance which has ever been here and has ever been the substance of all things. And that substance I am. You're seeing self everywhere. You're not localized to this form anymore. And it was necessary to relinquish will, desire, past and future, to live only in now through the will of God, as the will of God, in order to be lifted into this realization. Now, because the mind is unable to do this, we are asked to commune with the Father, and Joel recommends that we do it frequently. The frequent reminder that the will of God in me is the only will I have. The life of God in me is the only life I have. Let God run God's universe without personal interference. But let God run God's universe where you are. And where everyone is concerned with you. And so these intervals he recommends are short ones. He said, preferably a minute and a half. 2 or 3 minutes, if you wish. And frequently at 15 seconds, intervals of 15 seconds, the reminder, the acknowledgement, that the only presence where I stand is God. Until this becomes an accepted realization. He says it should happen in a couple of months, that there is in you a new kind of awareness about this relationship. Now, I notice that the word realization is misconstrued by many people. How I yearn to realize the presence of God, someone says. And so they wait for the presence of God to say, here I am. And in many cases, that's like waiting for the weather. The weather is already here. And if you wait for it, you keep waiting for something that is here. It's the same with the realization of the presence of God. If you wait for it, what are you waiting for? When it is here. And so realization has to be redefined. It isn't a waiting for the presence of God in you to announce itself. It's a little more precise than that. It's an acceptance by you that the presence of God is the name of your being. All the waiting is merely a denial of that fact. Wait upon the Lord, fine. Seek God, fine. But after you seek God and find God, what do? After the seeking has produced what you sought, what do? Are you still going to seek it? Are you still going to wait on it? You're going to accept. Yes, this is so. This is so. The Father is here. The Father is my substance. And because it is so, now I will be meek unto my substance. Now I will wait for the substance to act, and I will work hitherto. But my meekness is only to that substance. When that substance says, jump, I jump. When that substance says, you go out into the crowd and do, I do. The meekness stops. It is meek only to the Word. And if the Word says, now by your deeds you must show, then you've got to go out and do the deeds. And so the meekness is but a little doorway. And now we are no longer in that state which is waiting for the realization of God. That was a very pleasant state. We didn't have anything to do. We could just say, someday God's going to announce itself. But the finished kingdom of God within you is expressing and has been expressing, and the acceptance of it is not a waiting, it becomes a doing. And the doing is the active realization, not a passive one. So that I'm not waiting for the weather to come, it's here. I'm not waiting for God to come. God has ever been here. Now I realize that the voice is ever imparting. There isn't a moment when the voice is not imparting. There will be a time when you'll know that all there is the voice. There is nothing else. The infinite voice is the infinite Word. And the infinite Word is the infinite manifestation. They are one. There is no inner and outer. This is but a human concept. The inner and the outer are one and the same. There's an inner and an outer to a human mind. But to the divine mind, there's no inner and outer. To the divine mind, there's no evil. And if I still see evil, that should tell me quickly that I am not seeing through the divine mind. I am not in oneness with the divine mind. I am not meek unto the Father. I am not the one will. Oneness, then, is oneness in everything. Now you're beginning to feel your own power. As you know, the will of God in me must be there. I simply haven't been responsive enough to it. Now suppose I did nothing except through the will of God. Suppose I could demonstrate that total fidelity, that when I lifted my hand, it was the will of God lifting that hand. When I walked down the street, it was the will of God walking down the street. When I build a skyscraper, it's the will of God building a skyscraper. Do you see that as we can do this, that we are fulfilling our destiny on this earth, How can God's will express itself except when there is one there who will not walk away from that will? How can you possibly know what you're to do? How can you build with substance unless it's God's will in you? And if it's God's will in you, have you not found the touchstone, the secret key? Isn't that what success really is? Now ask yourself another question. Are there human beings in heaven? And you'll quickly answer, why, I doubt it very much. There are probably no human beings in heaven. Then ask yourself, is God here? The answer is yes, God is omnipresent. Well, is God in heaven? Yes, I suppose God is in heaven. But if God is here, then this must be heaven. And we've just decided there are no human beings in heaven. What are these beings that we see? Well, they can't be human beings because this is heaven. God is here, it must be heaven. What are they? They are the invisible Christ. Now, it is the will of the Father that each be perfect as the Father, and therefore each is perfect as the Father. What difference does it make what mask they're wearing? Each is perfect as the Father, because each is the Christ. Therefore, I am addressing myself to the Christ when I live in the will of the Father. In the will of the Father, I can only see the Christ. I must see through all appearance. I cannot see the disaster. I cannot acknowledge the reality of the catastrophe. I cannot see the flood, the fire, or the hurricane as a destructive force. Behind all this is the reality of the Christ. And I must be that one which moves in this awareness at all times. Even if I awake at night, I must recognize that I am the living will of God. And that will is ever maintaining its perfection in all things. You are not permitted a desire. You accept desire at the peril of losing selfhood and having to climb the mountain all over again. Now, in no selfhood of our own, we are living totally in the government of God. We are fed by God, clothed by God, housed by God, sustained by God. Life is living itself as you. Now, for those of you who have gone beyond the point of personal selfhood and have accepted and experienced those moments of Christhood, you know that for you, turning back would be impossible. What you experienced is so precious, and yet so promising of something far beyond itself, that your experience is the assurance you needed so that you would not turn and say, this is not my way. Others who have not gone past personal selfhood may wonder what's to be gained. If your fears have decreased, if something in you already has accepted that there will never be a time when you're not alive, if something in you has accepted that there is an invisible power functioning as your being, then you have had more than your moment of Christhood. And you are being prepared for the higher revelation that there never was a human you on this earth. We couldn't take that unless we had slowly been lifted into it. Once we have lost control of ourself as a human being, unless we had this infinite self completely in control, we would go berserk. So if you find that your progress is slow, be thankful, be patient. If your progress is too fast, before you're ready for it, you will be hurt very badly. The spirit may grind slowly, but with purpose. If you see others who seem far ahead of you, it really makes no difference whatsoever. There'll be fruit on every tree. The important thing is to do what you do and do it well. For everything you're doing is part of a pyramid. The surrender is a transition in consciousness. And as you're letting go of this human consciousness, walking out on the water, your faith will not hold you up unless it is rooted in understanding and truth and experience. It's still a faith in the unseen, but a faith in the unseen which you have experienced. You'll know when to be brave, and it won't seem a bit brave to you. It'll seem very normal and natural. Now, assuming then that among us are those who are walking on water now, even we need assurance, because there are many times when we find the water over our heads. But when it's over your head and you come up again, this experience is priceless. This is what gives you the willingness to stay submerged longer if necessary. Now, surely by now you know that if we were all in a collapsed mine shaft, God would be just as present as if we're walking down Market Street in the sunshine. And the reason God would be just as present is because that is the name of your substance. And it can never be in a collapsed mine shaft. We must never be fooled by the appearance into accepting it as really happening. Do you see that the material happening is never happening? There is no material universe to happen. And don't try with your human mind to make a little mental note of that. But rather know that in your divine consciousness, this is just part of the kit of knowledge. And that is why you must release again and again and again to the divine consciousness, which knows all things. Things which to your human mind sound incredible or beyond your capacity. Now, as you're surrendering, you may still have a feeling that this over here is beyond my capacity, and this over here is too high for me, and that over there is something that I would never hope to attain. If so, you're still in your human will, your human belief, your human concept. There is no limitation to yourself. Yourself cannot be limited, for it is infinite. The transcendental I, which is your being, is not concerned about human limitations. It is not concerned about any of the concepts that you use as walls or barriers, which you think are insurmountable. It knows none of these things. And again, as you are lifted out of self into selfhood, into reality, the transcendental presence does the work. It does all the work. And you find that the outer form is merely a hitherto, a sort of an echo in the outer. The things that seem external to you are only external to your outer form. When you're lifted into I-ness and know you have no outer form, then there's no external anymore. All is within. The universe is within you. And you're free because you're not in duality of an inner and an outer, of a mind that looks out and is learning how to look in. Now, that is why we are told to be meek under the Spirit. It is the only way in which we can be lifted above human limitations. While you are doing this, the Spirit, which knoweth your needs, is ever present to bestow upon you its blessings, its signs, its assurances, its touches of grace, to be ever assured that its presence is upon you. Now, this presence, then, must be understood in its proper light. It is not enough to come to the level of the Bible. That is not enough. You must come above the Bible. You must come to the point where that which the Bible tells you to do is done, and then you are above the Bible. When you are no longer seeking, but have sought and have discovered the presence of God, your days of seeking are over, and that is above the Bible. It has lifted you above itself. It has lifted you above its own words, into the experience of those words. When I and the Father are one in your consciousness, only the Father stands where you are. And if at the moment this is difficult to credit or seemingly immodest. One means identical.